The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Discover hope and healing from the other side. Welcome to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesman.
Listen, they're all around you, close as a thought or a memory.
Messages of Hope. Messages of Hope.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode. I'm so excited about today. When I hear that title, Messages of Hope, I get goosebumps because today, if my special guest doesn't fill you with hope, then something's wrong. I just spent the last hour or so going over the notes that I took from her wonderful new book, Love is Always the Lesson, and boy, are there a lot of lessons in that book. I'm going to introduce Sherry Smith in just a few minutes, but I have an announcement to make. I'm so excited that I am going to get to lead a retreat at Unity Village. This being Unity Online Radio, thought it was appropriate to share with all of you that for the fourth time, I'm going to gather a bunch of kindred spirits, whoever wants to join me on the beautiful campus of Unity Village in Lee's Summit, Missouri. It is a sacred place. I just love it there. In fact, after my last three-day retreat there, I asked Ty, can we go back and just walk around the grounds some more? Because we just experienced so much love with everyone. This retreat is going to be actually three and a half days in April of next year, 11 to 14 April, and we're calling it Holy You. It's a little play on words, like the word whole and holy, and it's all about coming to rediscover our wholeness, both the human sides of us and the spirit side, and celebrating how sacred and magnificent we all are. So if you want details on that, please go to my website, suzannegiesman.com. Up on the top of the menu is just the word new, as in what's new on the website. And if you go to that page, that's the easiest way to get details on the retreat at Unity Village. Also, before we get going, I want to tell you that we've made a decision with the show that the first Thursday of every month, the episode will be called Ask Suzanne and Sanaya. Sanaya being my team of guides who I channel and connect with every morning for a message. So this is your chance as listeners to call in the first Thursday of every month and ask any question you want to know about the afterlife, the spirit world, metaphysics. I'm going to try to stay away from personal questions because I don't want to lose interest from listeners if they're not interested if somebody's going to make a fortune or not. So if you have the higher level questions, be thinking of them and join us next week, the first Thursday of the month, or if you're listening to this in the archives, any first Thursday of the month, ask Suzanne and Sanaya. So enough of that. Got to get on with today's show. My guest is Sherry Smith. She's worked as a registered nurse and nurse practitioner in the field of women's health, and that career helped her to learn how to support and counsel her patients. She became interested in energy medicine, and then her life took a dramatic turn with the sudden death of her first husband. Due to her interest in metaphysical side of life, the experiences surrounding death and dying, dreams, telepathy, and the field of parapsychology, they helped her to find a new way of life that she never dreamed possible. She was given the gift of knowing, just like I do and many of you listening, that life is eternal, that love is forever. So I could go on and on with her bio, but I think it's more important to just let Sherry come in and share with us. How are you doing today, Sherry?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful to be here.
Well, I think it's just so exciting because your book is hot off the press. The book, again, Love is Always the Lesson. You can find that on Amazon, folks, if you want to find it after the show or pull it up now while we're talking. But she's a first-time author. The book has only been out a couple weeks. And Sherry, you reached out to me by email, and I felt that nudge from Spirit to pull up your book. And as soon as I started reading it, I said, ooh, radio show guest. Because I'm doing most of the talking now, but I'm going to turn it over to you in just a second, Sherry. But you know what's beautiful is, Sherry, you know, everybody has a story, And you don't have an earth-shaking story, moving mountains type story. You have a life of stories that illustrate the unseen forces in our lives. And that's what I love. You're tuned in to the connection with the other side. Mm-hmm. So you ready to start telling us about how that all started for you?
Sure. I realized in my early adulthood, as I was taking care of patients in the hospital and then became focused on women's health care, but especially in my early days in the hospital, I would get that occasional patient who was at death's door, and it started to become very clear to me that I was very uncomfortable with the fact that I didn't have a clear sense of what happens. Where do we go? What happens? What should we be thinking about with this? How can we talk to people that are getting ready to cross over? Because it seemed like in my experience, mostly people avoided it. They avoided the patients. They avoided any conversation about it. So I started listening to those kinds of messages as I was exposed to death and dying. And I feel it was the opposite of that. I was in the field and bringing new life in. So I started paying attention to my dreams, and around that time, a good friend of mine, synchronicity being the way it is, said, hey, there's a professor teaching a dream class at the local community college. Would you like to take it with me? And I said, yes, I'd love to. And so we took this class, and it basically changed my life because we started recording our dreams. He taught us about all the things that could happen in the dream state, communication with the living, communication with the dead, insights, premonitions. You know, of course, there's just nonsense dreams as well. But what we learned was that when we start paying attention to our dreams, and you can ask questions of your dreams and get answers, and that when you start paying attention, your dream life will change. It will take on a more meaningful, be a more meaningful experience. And basically, I don't know that he used these words, spirit can come in and start working with you at that level, because when you're in the dream state, you have access to all this information. So I started journaling my dreams and asking questions, and we experimented with dreaming for each other, and there were a lot of things that happened in that class, but from that day forward, I felt a connection to my higher self. I felt something greater at work in my life, and so that was my first experience with paying attention, with starting to pay attention, starting to write things down, and I think that helped train my mind for the experiences that were going to happen to me in the future. It was just the beginning and that nudge of, you know, pay attention to this. So the next step, I started paying attention to death and dying. How did I feel about it? What was that about for me? And I started reading books by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and books from Raymond Moody and people that had, you know, were also interested in this field of life after death and any proof of it and helping with grief and all of those subjects that came forward.
It's like you were being prepared. I listen to you now knowing how your story unfolded, and this just feels like such a setup from spirit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So at this point, I'm just in my early, I'm in my mid-20s. But I started getting more comfortable with this and more fascinating with the mystical, anything mystical. And so then to fast forward, when my husband died unexpectedly, and the whole story is in the book, but he had a heart attack when we were camping, and there was very little warning, but he had some warning signs. He was having some premonitions, and he was a total skeptic about anything. You know, I had a hard time having any conversations with him about life after death or anything spiritually. He would just sort of brush it off and say, well, it's a nice idea, but I am just too busy living here and now to be bothered with it. I just, you know, have no reason to believe in that. Well, along the way, go ahead. Did you want to say something?
Well, I just wanted to interrupt you because you were a nurse, he was a doctor. And
right.
I just, when I read your description of how you felt the very first time you saw him, I thought the way I felt when I saw my husband die for the first time, there's this this unusual sense of knowing. It's like nobody else you've ever met. And I, reading your description, I recognize that. And there, Would you call it destiny, a feeling of destiny when you met him?
That's the word that was coming to me as you were saying that. It was a definite sense of destiny. And a pull, like a pull that there was just no walking away from. I had to follow it through no matter what the cost. And that it was that kind of a love story for us. And we were at a very happy point in our life. And anyway, he started doing some unusual things. Like he brought home a poem about death. And he said, I hope this is how it is. It's the poem about stand by my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. And that was really strange. I got that goosebumpy feeling like, why is this person who's never wanted to talk about this suddenly turning this corner and being curious about it? And so I said, I had read a book about communication after death. And I said, look, would you make a promise to me that if you die before me, that if you can communicate to me that there's life after death, that you'll do that? And he said, yeah, I'll make that promise. And I said, it would really mean a lot to me. And we had
You were what? You were only 30, 31 years old at the time, right?
At the time I was 29 and he was 16 years older. So he was a little bit older. So I thought, well, chances are I'll outlive him. So it didn't seem terribly unusual to be having these thoughts and conversations. But then looking back, of course, very unusual. And then when he did die, I immediately had that memory of these conversations that we'd had. And my mom came from California, which was two states away, 3 days later, and before she went to bed that night, I said, I wonder if I'll get a sign. And she didn't know what I was talking about because I'd never had any conversations with anyone about the topic. So she said, oh, that's nice, honey, whatever. And she went to bed. And then the next morning when I got up, my mom is very, I'll say psychic, but intuitive. And she always had in premonition dreams and things like that. So she had the gift. But anyway, so she had a total experience with him coming to her and telling her, that he was there and that he would stick around to help me as long as I needed him. And there was a whole message from him.
Well, I want to slow down a bit because this is the magical part. This is, for me, the meat of any interview with somebody who's had these mystical experiences. I have it right in front of me. He said, this is right out of your book, Love is Always the Lesson. He said, don't be afraid. It's James. She had to have a sign. I don't know why she had to have a sign, but she had to have a sign. Tell her that the sign is green, Janet. I'm out here on the court, on the sport court. Really, I'm everywhere. I'm even in the wind, referring to the line in the poem you two had talked about. So right away, he's acknowledging the need for the sign. And why was green so important?
Well, we talked about green a lot in our life. I used to, tease him and tell him I loved him in his green scrub clothes. And we had just put emerald green carpet in our family room, and our house was green. And we lived in the Northwest, and everything was green. And green is the color of rebirth, and it's the color of the heart chakra. And there were just so many things that tied in with green. And it was, my favorite color. And so I thought that the sign is green, that the message in and of itself was my sign. So, but when my mother is having this experience with him, she sees like a hologram in front of her of four boxes. And she doesn't understand this, but she explains to me, I saw these four boxes and I don't understand what that meant. And I said, well, I don't either at this point, but, we'll pay attention. And to back up a little bit, the first night when he died, the night he died, he came to me in a dream. And I said, you're not dead. And he said, no, and I'm not dead. And he was just with me. And I knew he was with me, but nobody else could see him but me. And then every day after that, he came to me with a message about his services. And so this started before my mother even arrived, before this profound experience that she had. And so the most profound message that he gave me was, I said, what do you want? If you're here and you can hear me and you know where your veterans' discharge papers are from the Air Force, I'm going to need those to get any benefits. And I went to sleep, not thinking too much of it. The next morning, I wake up with the word x-rays in my mind. X-rays, what does that mean, x-rays? And so I went through the day with this word just kept coming to me, x-rays. And I remembered seeing an x-ray folder, you know, the old x-ray folders that you had to carry around, the big yellow folders.
Yep.
I remembered seeing one in the back of a closet. And so I went to the closet and I pulled it out and his discharge papers were at the bottom.
I love that story. And for those of you listening, I mean, Sherry is the perfect example. She says to her mom, we'll pay attention. We'll look for the signs. She knew to do that. And you also trusted when he came to you in a dream that it wasn't crazy. It wasn't your imagination. It wasn't, quote, just a dream. So you're asking him to help you out. And you didn't get an answer right away, but it pops into your awareness as you woke up the next day. And this is how it works.
Exactly. And I had something like that happen every day of the week he died. One day it was no organ music, call Randy. And I'm thinking, I don't even know who Randy is. And then I remember that one of the doctors in our clinic, his name is Randy. So I called him. And I said, I got this message. I don't know what it means. You know, do you know anything about music? And he said, yeah, I'm a classical guitarist. And he said, and I study with Eric King's dad, who was like a very well-known classical guitarist in Seattle. And he said, I'll get him to do a service. I mean,
so your husband, James, comes through, pops into your mind and says, no organ music, and then gives you the name of the guy that plays guitar for the service. It's fantastic. This is how it works. Those on the other side, he had a clear conduit with you. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So it was like he planned his service. And so the third day after he died, back to my mom's message from him, tell her the sign is green. Well, the conversation I had with him about the husband and wife who gave each other a sign, the sign that they gave was a bush blooming that he'd given her for an anniversary, and it never bloomed in the day. Second day or something after he died, she went outside and the bush was in full bloom. So that was the story. So it was about flowers. It was about, you know, nature. And so the third day after, it was a couple days later, my mom and I are sitting in the kitchen. We're looking out at our big picture windows. There's four baskets, big, huge flower baskets, because this was square. He died on the 4th of July. So it was summer. These beautiful baskets, I had them planted every year at the local floor, gardening place. And we're sitting there, and one of them drops to the ground and crashes. And I thought, where's my sign? And then, remembering the four boxes that she saw.
Yeah.
So, and then my logic kind of took over, and I thought, nah, just got too heavy for the hook, you know. But I didn't do anything about it. And the next day, it was just still the mess was there, the box and everything. And I went outside to pick it up, and I looked up under the eaves, and the whole basket had been lifted. It had not pulled from weight out of the hook. It had been lifted off the hook because the hook was intact. Both hooks were intact. It had to be lifted off. So then I knew the four boxes were the four flower boxes. So that was the clue.
So if I could interrupt here, I know that some people who are listening are new to communication from the other side and how those in spirit can affect physical things in our lives. And your story of the flower box falling off a perfectly good hook reminds me of when Ty and I went to see a medium after our daughter Susan died, and we were sitting there in a big flower pot, and a big clay pot just fell off the table onto the ground, seemingly by itself. And I want to assure those who are listening that our loved ones are not in some far-off heaven. They're right there. We just can't see them, like fan blades that are moving so quickly. They're there, but you can't see them. And so it takes quite a bit of effort on their part to move things in this dimension. But when you have a really strong spirit, and clearly James is one of those, they can pull off these what to us appear to be miracles.
Right. And my first thought, And I told everybody we knew that I had an opportunity to. As I said, if you died a sudden death and you didn't get to say goodbye and you didn't get to finish your life, then you would want people to be listening if you could get a message to them. And so I said, if you get anything, please share it with me because I'm interested in this. And that's how I felt. It's like, I'm not going to fabricate things, but I'm going to stay open. I'm just going to stay open to anything that comes to me, and I'm going to journal it, and I'm going to pay attention. And so that's what I did, and it lifted my grief tremendously because I was so busy. I was so excited to know he still existed, that he survived physical death, that now I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's more, because until then, it was just a curiosity. Now I know. So that just changed my life from then on. And there were lots of things that happened, and I wrote about them in the book. But
he messed with your dad.
Oh yeah, that was funny. That was funny. My dad came to stay a couple weeks later, and he said he kept getting woke up like somebody was jerking his toe. And he said he'd sit right up in bed and then nothing was there and he'd go back to sleep. And this happened like two or three times or whatever. And he finally, just out of frustration, got up and went out into the kitchen. And we had this big oak wine rack that had wine glasses hanging upside down on it. And he said the glasses started clanking and clanking and clanking. And he said, that's it. I'm out of here.
You know, a lot of us were raised in the era when Amityville Horror movie was on, and people love to hear about ghosts and hauntings. And I'm here to tell you, these are our loved ones that are trying to say, I'm here. Don't you get it? This is not scary. I'm trying to show you I'm still with you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But I do feel
That's
for
right.
your dad.
Yeah, well. He got used to the idea over the course of his lifetime because I, you know, was always telling him stories and sharing things with him and whatever, but it was new to him at that point for sure. So it was a pretty exciting time metaphysically. It was I was in shock, I'm sure, from the sudden, you know, I mean, you're here 1 minute and then you're gone with no warning. But yet I realized that I had been warned in a sense because I'd been nudged and guided, and I had better skills and better tools to deal with his sudden death than anybody I knew. So it was really important to me to stay present and stay as clear-headed as I possibly could. I had a 2-year-old daughter, and so I wanted to be, you know, be there for her, but I also just wanted to make sure that I didn't miss anything. And so I was, you know, I was able to really actively participate at every step along the way and be the observer and yet live it at the same time. So I would kind of go in and out of those two states.
Yeah, you make it very clear in your book that it wasn't easy. This just made it easier. And you made a very good point. I know there are a lot of you listening who have had a loved one pass and you haven't had these kind of experiences. And Sherry writes in her book, and I completely agree with this, I believe there's a period of time after crossing over to the next life that increased opportunities for communication exist. I've been careful not to expect such communication, yet to stay open to the experience if it arises. And this is key. I mean, not all spirits are ready to communicate right away. Your husband was and left you such beautiful, beautiful signs that he was around. A lot of dream visits.
And I have my experiences with death, and I've, you know, lost several people now, is that there isn't always unfinished business. There isn't always a reason or a need to communicate. So each situation is so unique.
Perfect.
And just to trust that. And, you know, I didn't always have someone to talk to about these things, but I'm a very open person. And so I shared with everybody that I could. Well, by doing that, those people that were also having experiences would share with me. Another really profound one was my babysitter. And her husband was there with her. The phone rang. And when she picked up the telephone, she heard Jim's voice on the other end. And he said, thank you for taking such good care of my little girl.
Oh, man.
And she was just blown away, you know. But she was a very spiritual person herself, and she didn't nobody doubted the authenticity of the experiences that they had because they were so real. And some of them were subtle and some of them were real obvious. I had a... Go ahead.
Well, I like what you wrote in the book also, that these encounters, not just with you, but with the babysitter, with his fellow physicians who he went to in their dreams, you wrote, these encounters serve to help us process our relationships with him. I believe more importantly, they were his way of finishing his earth life. He seemed to be reassuring all of us that he had survived his transition.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So
go ahead, Sherry.
No, I'm just going to say, even though, you know, you can't change the adjustment to losing someone, their physical presence is devastating, and especially when it's a husband or a child, I feel, because you're so much intertwined in your daily life. But knowing that they're okay is huge. I mean, to me, it's just when you love someone that much, you just want to know they're okay. You know that you'll get through it somehow.
Absolutely. Sure. Now, we're going to have to go to a break in just a few seconds here. I hope you'll all come back because Sherry has two husbands on the other side. We're going to talk about how she dealt with that. But I just want to share the words of her minister at her husband's service. He said, "Those of you who do not believe in life after death have reason to grieve."
Oh, I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach around the world, we depend on the generosity of listeners like you. If you enjoy the programming, please make your donation today by going to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support.
Confucius said that to be wronged is nothing unless you continue to remember it. If we can let our past remain in the past, we are not compelled to endlessly reenact it. If we seek to understand the situations in the other person's life and put forth the effort to walk a mile in his shoes, we may be less quick to take offense at what may be directed toward us. Understand that forgiving does not mean excusing, but dwelling on past slights or offenses can never help us grow. Unforgiveness always diminishes us. An African proverb says, "The one who forgives ends the quarrel." You can be a powerful agent for healing. Let go of old hurts. Let the past be the past. Forgive.
This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Would you like to show your support for Unity Online Radio? You can donate easily on your phone by texting the word VOICE to 50555 and donate $10 to support Unity Online Radio. It's easy to do, and your offering will help us keep inspirational and positive programming on the air. Remember, just text the word VOICE to 50555 and support your favorite shows on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes you might feel so alone with your problems, you don't know where to turn. We invite you to call Silent Unity, the 24/7 prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you every day at any hour. Listen and relax as you hear the beautiful words affirm the highest and best outcome for you and those you love. No matter what's going on in your life, Silent Unity is always standing by. The toll-free number is 1-800-NOW-PRAY.
Get ready to stretch your thinking and question your beliefs. Tune into Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck every Monday at 10 a.m. Central on Unity Online Radio. Paul, along with his co-hosts, Reverends Bill and Cher Holton, will challenge your thinking and inspire you to open your mind and look outside the box. Discover Unity's spiritual laws and take a deep dive into the world of metaphysics and apply life-changing concepts today. Tune in Mondays at 10 Central on Unity Online Radio.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
Welcome back. You're listening to Messages of Hope with Suzanne Giesemann.
Oh boy, I'm glad we're back because I have so much more I want to ask Sherry about. Sherry is my guest today. Sherry Smith, the author of Love is Always the Lesson. We've been talking about the passing of her first husband, James. And James did an amazing job of coming through from the other side to make sure that he let his family know that he was still there. Now, what was his belief in God, Sherry, before he passed?
Oh. Right, and this was probably the most profound thing for me, is that he came to me in a dream. It was the most profound visitation experience that I had with him. And he came to me, and he looked very ethereal. I mean, there was like white light emanating around him, through him, and then we had this amazing embrace. And he stood back, and he said, there was an urgency. I have to tell you, there is God. And God is love. Now, coming from him, that was very, very profound because of his skepticism about a higher being. And then he went on to tell me, you're gonna love again and all of that. But the essence of the message was that there is God.
And that's pretty cool. Oh, I got goosebumps. Anybody else have goosebumps while she's talking?
It was very cool.
So you write in the book that you realized you were suffering from severe post-traumatic stress. And I've only recently begun to hear people talk about that the death of a loved one is as traumatic as wartime action and accidents that we have. So what you dealt with that how?
Well, I think especially with a sudden death where you're thrown into shock. I mean, with any death is challenging and difficult, but in my case, that I didn't experience that with other deaths I've been through because I had time to sort of process as I went through it, seeing it coming. But with the sudden death, I tried to go back to work and I couldn't work. It was like my brain just absolutely wouldn't function. I could function metaphysically and spiritually, and I could get up and make breakfast. But I couldn't think. I couldn't use my left brain at all. And the words would just, I would try to look at a lab test that had come back. Or, I could talk to people, but I couldn't do the hard science part of my job. And I could tell, it's just like, it's too soon. I can't do this. I can't be of service to other people the way I used to be. So I just decided to be kind to myself. And I always tell everyone that I know that's grieving, it's just, be kind to yourself, pamper yourself, listen to your needs. And so I didn't go back, I quit my job at that point and just focused on being there for my daughter. But in terms of surviving grief, the number one way that I've survived loss, any loss, is gratitude, is to just take stock of all of my blessings every day. And as soon as I started going through that situation with James and his death, as I was living it, there was another voice in me saying, oh, be grateful that this nurse was on duty and be grateful that these friends were there to help you and be grateful for. It's like the whole gratitude thing just started flooding through me, all these this awareness of everything I had to be grateful for and all the people that had been through similar situations without the support that I had, without all of these gifts. And so gratitude is at the top of my list. And being aware of synchronicity, being a good receiver, letting people help you. Because I'm so used to being a giver. I'm the one that's in charge. I'm the one who runs the practice. I'm always the one doing the giving and doing the organizing and making the decisions. And to heal from my grief, I couldn't be that person. I needed to sit back and let other people take care of me for a period of time. So learning to be a good receiver and to ask for what I needed was really important. And journaling, it's the best therapist you can have. And therapy is great if you can, you know, find your way to a therapist. It's like all your issues are on the surface when you're grieving. But journaling is so powerful because it helps you move through it. And I say, hey, journal on a piece of toilet paper and flush it if you don't want to keep it. It doesn't matter what you do with it. What matters is that you empty it out of your head, and it will help you keep moving forward.
Right?
Feel it and sit with it and honor your pain and trust, you know, develop trust. I'm still here, so I must have more living to do. I haven't fulfilled my purpose on the earth or I wouldn't be here. I know a lot of people have survivor guilt. Why am I still here and they're gone? And it's like, I feel like I'm still here. I still have a reason to be here. Now let's get on with figuring out what that is. So trusting life and the cycle of life, that life goes on, whether you feel like going with it or not, it will pull you back eventually. And so those were the things that I focused on that were helpful to me. And paying attention to my dreams and, you know, continuing on my spiritual path and all of that was, you know, I didn't feel alone. I know someone handed me one of those leaflets at the door from one of the churches and it said, you know, why did bad things happen to good people kind of a thing. And at the end of the pamphlet, it said, so you can help someone else someday. And it was like, I held on to that like Dumbo with a magic feather. It was like, I'm going through this and I'm going to embrace this so I can help someone else someday.
And you're doing that. It's just beautiful. I just want to plug your book again. Her book is called Love is Always the Lesson, which that title just grabbed me. And let me tell you, I know you're going to help far more than just one other person.
Thank you.
So I wish we had 2 hours to talk to you, but since we only have this 1 hour, let's move on because you did love again, only this time It was somebody very opposite from your first husband.
Right. So I basically surrendered my life to God and said, just give me, you know, someone to love. I have all this love in me and it needs a place to go. And Alicia, my little girl at the time, she kept saying, I want a daddy, find me a daddy, I need a daddy, find me a daddy. And she would beg me for a daddy. And I'm like, well, I can't just go to the Blue Light Special at Kmart and get you one. I mean, you know, when it's time, it will happen. So anyway, I had surrendered my life and changed where I lived and gone back to be closer to my family of origin. And I just, the nudges, the synchronicity just got guided to a circumstance where I met this man who was totally different from anyone I'd ever known. And he was passionate about life and he was fun and he was a New Yorker and, you know, had grown up in a whole different environment than me. And so anyway, there were all of this magnetism present and I was ready. I thought I was ready to move on.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Shari, I'm reading that part in your book and the little red flags are going up and I'm saying, see where this one's going.
Exactly. Yeah. I was not ready emotional. I mean, how can I say this? I wouldn't recommend it. Let me say that. I would not recommend anyone follow the exact path that I followed. But fortunately for me, I have been guided and directed and shown how to use it for a higher purpose. And so this marriage turned out to be a very difficult, challenging marriage. And there was love, but he was had borderline personality disorder, which I eventually discovered. And then he got cancer, and the cancer affected his personality in a negative way. And so I lived through this very traumatic, off and on traumatic life with him for 18 years. But
you know what I love is that you didn't harp on woe is me in the book. You showed how you rose above that. It wasn't all easy, but you went to Al-Anon and learned the tools there, and you share a lot of the tools that you learned mm-hmm. yourself. One line that just cracked me up in the book, you said, I needed to resign as general manager of the universe.
Yep, that's codependency at its best. And I was really fervently studying A Course in Miracles, and I was in the perfect life situation to apply the teachings that everything is love or cry for love, and I would look at conflict that way when someone was acting out, and I just tried to apply these principles, and I really immersed myself in my metaphysical spiritual life.
And Sherry, this really cracked me up. You guys listening will love this. Anybody that's on the spiritual path, you know how it uplifts you and it transforms you. And in fact, do you remember what you wrote about the question that your husband Bobby came home? You were so happy once you started discovering God and love,
yeah,
and even Jesus in your life. Do you remember what he asked you?
Yeah, he said, "Are you having an affair?" And I said, "What? Why would you ask me that?" And he said, "Because every time you come home from meditating with this friend, it's like you're in love. It's like you're, you know." And so I went on to explain to him how my energy was definitely higher and that I was in love with Christ. I mean, it was, you know, that kind of an experience. But he picked up on that energy, and he was trying to logically figure out what it could possibly be because it was so dramatic. Yeah, that was interesting.
If you will allow me, because this was really profound, as we're you just mentioned meditation and how it changes your life. You did a little bit of a sidestep in the book. For those of you listening, Sherry, for a short time, ran a metaphysical store of her own called Pathways with classes and books. I was so jealous, Sherry. It was like, I would be like having your own candy store. But would you share with those who are listening the story about the young man who came into the store who didn't believe in God?
Yes. So I had the storefront was a bookstore, metaphysical/holistic medicine, holistic health bookstore. But in the back room, we had classes and groups and teachers and all kinds of things going on. So anyway, people would just wander in. They would just be led to me. And I was always curious about, what's going on here? So this young man comes in one day with backpack on. And it was a university town, so I figured he's a college student, but he wasn't. And he starts looking at the books, and he goes, "Do you really believe all this crap?" And I know right then, oh boy, he wants to debate the subject. And so he goes on to say that he doesn't believe in anything but himself, and he's spewing all of this stuff about his ego and how he's not going to ever die, and he's going to stay in this body forever, and he doesn't believe in anything. And he was really angry, and he had like a chip on both shoulders, and I just could feel this thing inside of me, like wanting to get out, like you got to say something, but it's got to be the right thing. And so I just said a little prayer, and I said, "God, you know, use me as your instrument. Whatever is I'm supposed to say to this young man, use me." Mm-hmm. And so I said to him something to the effect of, "I would like to challenge you to an experiment," or however I said it. I said, "Would you be willing to just take 5 minutes a day and listen, just be still and just listen to inside, to the voice of your own heart?" And I said, "And then maybe you'll discover for yourself whether God exists." And he kind of, in his arrogant way, he said, "Well, I'll take you up on that," or something to that effect. And he disappeared, and I never saw him again for, I don't remember, couple years or something. It had been a period of time, and I was facilitating a support group, and there was a knock on the door, and I went out, and there stands this same young man, and he looked very travel weary, had the scruffy beard and all of that. And he said, "Could I speak to you please for a moment?" And I said, "Certainly." So I went outside, and he said, I've hitchhiked all over the United States," and he said, "I just want you to know that I took your challenge. I listened every day for a period of time," and he said, "and I discovered God, or God discovered me," or whatever, however he said it. He said, "There is God, and I found that." And he said, "And I came 100 miles out of my way to tell you thank you." He said, "Because had you not taken the time to challenge me," he said, I don't believe it would have ever happened. And he said, "My life will never be the same. I found peace." And I was like, I will never forget that encounter, because that was not me. I was just the instrument.
I love it. Okay. I love how you stopped. You wanted to say just the right thing. And everybody that's listening, this is how it works. You know, at our level, we may not know the right thing, but Sherry just, she shifted above and asked to be given the right words. And boy, that transformed him. You wrote in a book, when your motive is love, you create fertile soil for miracles. Do what you can and get out of the way. Let God do the rest. A spiritual awakening is a wonder to behold. Yeah.
It's true. And even the word ego, easing God out. I mean, part of the whole process, and I think this is really critical, is people will say, well, how do you have these experiences? How do you hear and get this guidance and stuff? And it's like, the first thing I had to do was my ego work. And I did that through 12-step work and through looking at dysfunctional families. And, you know, I spent several years doing my own personality work and healing my childhood, healing my past, and getting very familiar with what part of me was ego and what wasn't. And A Course in Miracles is good at helping you discern the difference between those voices. But doing that work and then journaling, when I started becoming a more serious meditator, I think I had cleared out a lot of the junk that was in my psyche. And so I was able, when the situations arose, I was able to hear the higher guidance and hear the messages from loved ones. Love was the connection, no doubt. I mean, I'm not a professional medium or anything like that. It was just how it's manifested in my personal life.
But then you really had to put it to the test, because now you've had this difficult relationship with your second husband, Bobby, and he became ill with cancer and became, you wrote down, a totally crazed man mentally. Mm-hmm. And you write, what do you do with a sick and suffering soul? What did you do?
You love more. That's what I did. I mean, I don't know what other people, I know everybody would handle those kinds of situations differently. And I don't even know what advice I would give to someone else, but I know what I did and what the payoff was. And I stayed. And I stayed until, you know, the end. And then the interesting part about it was that there was peace at the end for him. And he came to me. He started coming to me over a course of there were several times that he came to me. And the messages that came through were profound, and he showed this profound understanding of his life and of where he'd gone wrong and what was important. And it was almost like he did a life review with me, in a sense, and what the meaning of our relationship was and how we evolved spiritually through a kind of through the path of conflict, in a way. That there's, you know, that there's other ways. Things are just not what they appear to be on the earth. That the higher meaning can look so different. And I learned a lot from Carolyn Mason in her writings about sacred contracts and things like that. That a lot of times the most important part of our spiritual journey is the hardest part.
Well, you said that a friend of yours said you must be in this relationship with him to learn endurance, and I think that was beautiful, because it showed you that this chapter of your life, you saw it then as an opportunity to develop more spiritual qualities.
Mm-hmm. I did. I really did. Because I could have left at any point. I was perfectly capable. I have two legs. I have enough will and everything else to walk out of a difficult situation. But the voices were the nudging, and the inner voice was, you get to choose. But my sense of it, but that it's okay to stay and finish this. And I didn't want to do it in another life.
This is really important, because I'm certainly not advocating that anybody who's listening stay in an abusive relationship.
No,
not at all.
And nor am
but
I.
This is your story, and you were really tuned in spiritually, and this was a choice that you made. So
exactly. It was a choice. And when I went to see a therapist that I had seen over the years with him, and I said, what about my kids? Will they be okay now? We know we've gone through this really dysfunctional cycle. And he said, they're going to be fine. And he said, because they're as dysfunctional as your life was with them, there was always love and there was always forgiveness. Hmm. And he said, you know, not every dysfunctional situation has that. And he said, but because those qualities were present, you're going to be fine.
And there was humor too. I was reading the book and I laughed out loud and read it aloud to Ty. I said, she was in this dysfunctional relationship. And 2 days before his last hospitalization, your husband looked at you and said, I wish we hadn't fought so much. If only you'd been different.
I'll never forget that. I laughed harder than I've probably ever laughed in my whole life. I mean, classic projection. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
But you were able to, you say you're not a medium, but a medium is anybody who can get clear messages from someone on the other side. And you were clearly channeling him afterwards.
Yes, I clearly did. And I know my own mind, and I know my own thoughts and my writing style. And I knew his, and he definitely brought through some very beautiful poetic messages and deep meaning. And he used to write when he was alive. He, especially when we were first together, he wrote some pretty amazing poetry. And right when we were close to his death, I said, why don't you write me some poems before you die? And he said, I'll write to you from the other side. Mm. And I said, okay, I'm gonna hold you to that. And he did. And the way that happened is I've had other people who've been able to do this as well. I sat down one day, I was feeling very emotional, and I wrote a letter to him as a way to process my grief. And when I finished the letter, I could feel him in the room, and I could feel these words coming into my mind. So I took the pen, and I started just writing what came to me. And I didn't know what I wrote until I was finished. And that's how it started. And then day after day, I would wake up with Italian love songs playing in my head and a message from him. And this went on for several days. And one day I was vacuuming, doing a real mundane thing, and all of a sudden in my mind, it's like, your love was like one of your massages. And I'm like going, what? Your love was like one of your massages. And it just kept repeating. And so I went and got a pen, sat down and wrote, and it was a whole poem. It was just a love poem based on that. So that was pretty cool. But I had learned how to set my ego aside and be in a total state of receptive listening to be able to get those messages. In a sense, I had practiced.
Of course, you'd had years of practice. And your sister, though, she had a clear communication from him. So, beyond just you receiving messages, why don't you share that one?
She got the first message from Bobby, and she was sitting at her computer. And the lamp next to her started going on and off and on and off. And this happened several times. And then the computer screen went blank. And then all of these words, you know, random words, how that used to happen all the time on a computer. And then just the word Phoenix was flashing up in the corner. And she got this message imprinted in her mind, tell Sherry to remember the Phoenix. And that didn't mean anything to her. And she called me and she was pretty rattled by the whole experience. And I said, well, it means perfect sense to me, because I used to say over and over again, our relationship is like the mythical phoenix. It just keeps rising from the ashes. So it meant a lot to me.
That's awesome.
From that point forward, you know, and for me, these communications, they haven't gone on and on and on. I mean, my loved ones come to me in dreams, and I have the occasional encounter, but these were like shortly after the passing that all of this information came through. I think what he communicated is worth reading for it. You know, especially knowing how difficult our relationship was, makes the communication make that much more sense. So that was pretty exciting stuff.
And, you know, Bobby was the last one that I would have thought was tuned in. But somehow, knowing how the web of interconnection works, he did tap into something, because he made a little prophetic statement about your life after he passed.
Oh, yeah, that was great, too. Yeah, he's laying on his literally on his deathbed within the week before he passed. And he said, he looked at me and he said, I'm not worried about you, Sherry. He said, it won't be long. You'll have a new husband, a motorhome, a new husband, and a dog. And I thought, what? We don't have a dog, and we've never camped. And I mean, he and I had never camped, and, you know, I said, well, and I'm exhausted at this point. The thought of ever being married again is more than I can handle. And I said, well, honey, you'll have to send me someone because that's the last thing on my mind. Well, and in the story I tell, in the book, I tell the story about meeting my current husband, which was all divinely guided. And he worked for a large company that converts buses into motorhomes. And he's a dog lover, a total dog lover. And one day, you know, a year later, I'm riding down the freeway, sit in a motorhome with my dog on my lap and my new husband. And I go, oh, my God, how did he know?
And I mean, you said you did have a fantasy. It would be nice to have one soulmate relationship, which did not involve so many lessons. I think you're finally at that stage, aren't you?
I feel like I'm finally. I have a wonderful husband and a tremendous marriage. And, I am blessed beyond belief. And why would anybody even want three husbands? I don't know, but it seems to be my path.
Well, relationships are how we learn, and you've done just a beautiful job in your book, Love is Always the Lesson, to share not only the lessons you learned through their living, but the lessons you learned through their passing. And if you were to summarize that with just a few seconds to go here, what is the greatest lesson you learned?
Love more, and trust. You know, eventually when the time is right, all will be revealed, what the meaning is. And I don't think our lives always are clear to us as we're living them. Maybe we just have to keep examining our motives and watch for the signs along the way, the synchronicities and the guidance, and keep moving forward, one foot in front of the other, and not be afraid of difficult circumstances, because the greatest treasures lie in the challenges.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Great
Thank
guest.
You, Suzanne.
Love your book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Michelle Phillips, a celebrity makeup artist, beauty expert, self-confidence coach, and Hay House author. My podcast, Beauty and Beyond, is the place for women navigating the challenges of the aging process. Listen in for my professional advice, as well as my expert guests, as we share valuable tips, practical tools, and empowering resources to help you not only look amazing, but also live an amazing life. Part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network and available wherever you get your podcasts.